Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is mobile services. Today's presenter is John Hosey. John is an architect in the WebSphere Message Broker development team. He joined IBM as a graduate in 2000 and has taken on a variety of engineering roles, including development and technical lead. Throughout these roles, he contributed to the delivery of many core product features. John has held the product architect role since 2010, and in this time has been instrumental in the high-level design and architecture of the product. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to John. John, you may begin.
Thank you, David, and good morning or good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining. So, as David said, today's session is on mobile services. And at the moment, mobile is huge. I don't mean the actual size of the physical devices, although they are getting bigger year by year. I remember during the late 90s and early 2000s, when every year it seemed that a new handset would come out that was smaller than the last one, but that trend has changed. But during that same time, something else was happening. The World Wide Web was growing up. It was transforming from being an information superhighway, a bunch of text, rich text linked files, to transforming into a global marketplace. And that transformation really changed the way people did business. It changed the way consumers interacted with retailers. It changed the way people accessed their financial services and interact with their bank accounts and so on. It changed the way businesses worked with other businesses, worked with their consumers, and worked with their employees. I think I can say without fear of exaggeration that a revolution of the same magnitude is happening just now. It's well underway already with mobile. So no longer do you need to log onto your desktop to access all of that e-business stuff. If you want to do a price comparison check, you don't need to be at home on your PC. You can do that when you're in a brick-and-mortar store with the product in your hand. Considering to buy it, you can log on to review and check reviews and log on to price comparison websites and make sure you're getting the right price. And the same goes for financial transactions. People are doing financial transactions, not in their office and not in their home, but on the train, in a restaurant, waiting for the food to arrive. So these things present lots of opportunities for businesses and lots of challenges. I'm sure everyone has taken the phone out of their pocket at some point and went onto a website. And how frustrating is it when that website doesn't have a mobile version? So those businesses that don't have mobile versions of their website, they're kind of the losers in this game at the moment. And the leaders are those businesses that not only have a mobile version of a website, but have a special application. An application that their consumers and their clients can download and install on their iPad or iPod or iPhone, or install on their BlackBerry device or Android device. And those applications embedded within the operating system and really present a much richer user experience and much more opportunity for innovation than the plain old website-based applications. But I'm sure that I'm wasting my time here. I'm telling you this. The fact that you're listening to this session shows that you already know this is happening. So what I can tell you, probably don't need to tell you this piece either, that as soon as you scratch between the surface of those applications, and the same goes for the e-business, e-commerce applications of the late 90s, early 2000s, as soon as you scratch beneath the surface, not very deeply, you see IBM platforms and middleware. And the thing that makes all of that stuff happen and make it valuable is the integration with your back-end services, your back-office systems. So this session, we're going to look at a couple of things that IBM have done over the past year or so that really help you and your clients participate in this revolution. So let's switch over to the slides. Let's move on to slide number two, David, and we'll introduce a couple of those things that we can talk about today. So there's really two things. First thing is IBM WorkLite, and this is the piece that enables the development and deployment of those applications. And then we have some message broker patterns that assist and enable those applications to integrate with your back-end services and systems. Okay, so first we'll go into a bit of detail on WorkLife itself. Not too much detail. This session is not intended to be an education on WorkLife, but I do feel I need to introduce it and explain some of the high-level concepts so that you're better placed to understand the message broker detail, and we'll get into a bit more detail on those message broker patterns. Okay, Dave, if we move on to slide three, we'll just see the title slide for this section of the session. And if we move on to slide four. So, WorkLife is, I think, what you would call a mobile enterprise application platform. It comes in roughly four parts. In terms of the architecture. The first part you will see is this studio. So it's an IDE, it's an integrated development environment. This is where you develop those applications. The other piece you would see then is the server, and that's where you deploy the applications to, and the server provides things like security and version management. And the runtime components are those pieces that get installed on your device. So these are the pieces that you would publish out through Google Play Store or Android Marketplace, as it was, or Apple iStore. And then those things get installed on the device as an application on that operating system. And then you have the console, and the console is the operator's window into the server. That's where the server gets managed from, and the console is a browser-based application. Okay, David, if you move on to slide five, we'll start to see how those different pieces interact. So, as I said, number one is the studio. And from the studio, you deploy to the server, and it also deploy to the device runtime via, as I said, the whatever distribution method is right for that device platform. When the application is running, it's communicating with the server over HTTP and over a secure connection. And that server is managed, administered from that console. Okay, so we move on to slide six now, please, David. Okay, so there are choices, as always, when developing applications. And each choice has benefits and drawbacks. Now, before WorkLife, there were really two choices, as I kind of hinted earlier in the introduction. So on slide six, we see on the far left, browser access, and on the far right, native apps. And those were the two choices you had before something like WorkLife comes along. So you, on the far left, your browser access means you write very portable HTML and JavaScript code. Your application is coded in HTML and JavaScript. All the client, all the consumer needs is a browser on his device. And your application is published as essentially as a web app. That's great. It's relatively cheap to develop and manage. The cost of skills in HTML5 and JavaScript and style sheets are low. It's very portable. You can support a wide variety of device types and form factors just by using those portable languages. However, it's not the best, richest, most endearing, compelling user experience. For that, you make the other choice and go to a native app. So you would write your application in Objective-C, and then you could deploy it to Apple devices. But you couldn't deploy it to Android devices. For that, you'd have to port the whole application to the Google API, and then you want to deploy it to BlackBerry devices, it's another port. So Windows mobile operating systems, it's another port again. But what work gives you is that sweet spot in the middle. You still write portable HTML and JavaScript code, and this is what we'll call the hybrid apps dash web. Okay, so you just write the same application as you would write for the web, but WebLite allows you to add what's called a skin. And that skin means that application doesn't need a browser to run, but the application is installed on the device itself as a standalone application. And it, within that skin is a set of JavaScript APIs that give your application access to the native capabilities on the device. Okay, so not only does it appear like an app, but you get more capability available to that application than you would from a standard browser-based application. Now, there are occasions, and some devices have certain capabilities that are not available over those JavaScript APIs. So there are occasions where you have to drop in and write some native code to exploit some of the specific capabilities of a particular device. And WebLite helps there too, and that's when you have what's called a hybrid app mix. And the point here is, when you need to write the native code, you know, if there's one page in your application, you have an application of 100 pages, and one of those pages needs some native capability, you write one page in native, and 99 pages are still written in that portable HTML JavaScript code. The power is there when you need it, but the efficiency is there always. Okay, so that's kind of, for me, number one reason for using WebLite, and makes all of that possible. There are lots of other benefits of WebLite, but that's the first one that strikes me. If we move on to slide 7, please, David. And the other thing that's necessary to discuss in terms of WebLite for this session is the idea of adapters. Now, adapters are pieces of code that we've run on the WebLite server. Those adapters are written in JavaScript, and you would code some JavaScript to make either some HTTP calls to your backend or some SQL queries to run on your backend databases. And once you've written that JavaScript code to do that HTTP or SQL callout, then those utilities, those procedures that you've coded, can be made available to your applications via JavaScript. Okay, so the application would code a couple of lines of JavaScript, and if we move on to slide 8, please, David, you'll see an example of what that JavaScript would look like. So this JavaScript here would be coded into the application, and at the point where you see wl.client invoke procedure, the device would make an HTTP call across to the server. The server would invoke that adapter code running on the server, and the adapter would do whatever you had coded it to do. It would make the call out across HTTP to your backend server, get the response back, maybe have to transform the response, simplify the data coming back to the device, and send that back. And the way this is coded here, it's set up, if that procedure returns on success, then it invokes the MySuccess callback. So then your JavaScript callback has the data you've retrieved from the backend server. Okay, David, if we move on to slide 9. So that's really as much detail of WebLite as we need for this session. The rest of the session we'll talk about where Message Broker fits in and helps you to build that end-to-end application to back-end service integration. Okay, so we move on to slide 10, please, David. So Message Broker is based in connectivity and transformation and routing. The Message Broker has the ability to connect to a vast array of different back-end services, whereas if you just use your WebLite adapters, you can connect to anything that has HTTP or SQL. And even then, you're really wanting to connect to things that are very simple interfaces that don't need much transformation or much logic in the decisions about how to get to the services, for example. But when you bring in Message Broker, those adapters can talk to Message Broker over very simple HTTP channels. Message Broker can make, you know, very complicated decisions about exactly which system this request should be routed off to. It can transform the data formats from the JavaScript objects that come across the wire into an SAP IDOC or an SAP BAPI call or XML or any of the proprietary or industry standard formats that are used by these back-end systems. And then it can then connect to those systems across, you know, MQ series or file transfer or plain old sockets or proprietary connectivity channels like the SAP RFC channels. It can invoke those backend services, get the response, and do the same thing on the way back, transform the response into the JavaScript object, send it back to the adapter. So you're really taking something that's, you know, available as a backend service or maybe a proprietary or non-standard interface, and making that available to a mobile device, an application running on a mobile device as a single JavaScript procedure. So these two things together, as you see, gives you quite powerful integration delivered into your mobile applications. Okay, David, if you move on to slide 11 now. Okay, so that integration is great. And you can build all of that with all of those pieces I mentioned. So the message broker part would be you develop some message flows. Those message flows consist of a number of message processing nodes. For example, there would be an SAP node to connect to SAP, a .NET node to run some C# code. You wire those nodes together. You define your data formats. You do your transformations. You build an adapter, as I say, you code some JavaScript, and you build the application. Patterns are another way. Patterns, so that first way I spoke of, it, if you like, it's a bottom-up development approach. You take that bag of bits and you wire it all together and you configure each of those pieces. It's the opposite, it's a top-down. A pattern is a design for a solution. It's a use case, if you like, and that's your starting point. And from that starting point, you get to all of the other pieces, all of the components that are needed for that solution. Okay, so for example, in the patterns gallery in Message Broker, we have a category of mobile applications and specifically work-like patterns. There are four patterns in there. One pattern takes a Microsoft.NET assembly and exposes that function to your mobile device, the .NET code, the C#, the VB.NET, the F#, whatever code will execute on the broker runtime, but it will be exposed as a JavaScript procedure to your application. Another pattern is a bit more generic. It would take any service, any web service developed on Message Broker, and expose that as a set of JavaScript procedures to your mobile apps. The third one here, the push notification from MQ, kind of goes in the opposite direction. This is pushing data onto the device. So you have events or notifications happening on your back end. Those things typically pass through MQ, whether it's PubSub or queues. So this pattern is used when you want to move those events from a queue to a notification on a mobile device. And finally, the resource handler is even more generic than the others, in that the idea here is you have a resource, some kind of repository of objects. It might be a database of customers or a CRM system with you know, customer and account objects in there. And the resource handler gives you create, read, update, delete access to those objects as, again, JavaScript procedures that can be invoked from your mobile applications. Okay. So we move on to slide 12, please. So let's start with the first one. I'll just talk through how that pattern can be configured. Hopefully, show you how simple it can be compared with building everything from the ground up. Okay. So if we move on to slide 13, there's a little illustration showing you what gets created by the pattern. So if we go on to slide 13, please, David. All right, so you see here on the right-hand side you have message broker. And on the left-hand side, this picture should be familiar from earlier, where you have the Worklight server, Worklight schedule deploying things into the server, and Worklight console managing the server, and those applications on the far left. Now, what's happening inside message broker, as I mentioned earlier, there's an assembly, a .NET assembly, your C# code, for example, is running inside message broker. So message broker brings up a CLR runtime and runs the Microsoft code inside the broker. That is then exposed out from broker as any SOAP over HTTP. And those adapters on the server consume that SOAP over HTTP service and provide that capability to the device. Now, what does the pattern create here? Well, the pattern starts with the .NET assembly. So the thing that you bring as a user of the pattern is the .NET assembly, a DLL that you've developed in Visual Studio using C#, for example. And the pattern creates just about everything else. It creates the message flows that will host the assembly. It creates the Wheelstone XSD that expose those flows as a web service. It creates the adapter that will consume the service and provide it to the front-end apps. And it also creates an application to drive that adapter, an application that you could use as a starting point for developing your own app or as an example, if you like, a sample or a test application for those adapters and back-end services. So if we move on to slide 14, please, David. You see the configuration that is needed to create that pattern. The first thing you need is the name of the DLL, and you can browse your file system to find that. You can drag and drop the DLL onto the broker toolkit to start the whole thing off. The only other thing you need to do is choose which class from that assembly you want to expose, and then choose which methods of that class you want to expose. And for each of those methods, you'd have a procedure on your adapter and a JavaScript procedure that would be called from the mobile applications. Okay, David, slide 15, please. And you see here that on the right-hand side, this is what appears in your broker workspace once you click the Generate button. So you configure the DLL, then tick boxes for the method, and this is what you get. You get a bunch of XSDs and wizards that describe the interface. You get a bunch of ESQL code that will drive the .NET code, and you get the flows that will run the .NET code, host the ESQL to call the .NET code. Okay, can we move to slide 16, please, David? And you also get the Worklight adapter. Now, this is a view of the Worklight console, and you can see the adapter, My Bank. In this case, it is the name of the adapter that's been deployed. You see it has a list of procedures, get balance, transfer money, find a missing account. And those procedures correspond to those three methods that we ticked on the .NET assembly. In case there was a get balance, transfer money, and find missing account, C# method in that assembly. And now with the click of a button, we have those three procedures as entry points to the adapter. Okay, slide 17, please, David. And finally, the icing on the cake, as it were, the application is created by that click of the button as well. And you bring that application from the broker toolkit, broker workspace, you bring it into the Worklight workspace. they're both Eclipse-based, so it's just a case of importing an Eclipse project from one to the other. And you have the application. You have all of the HTML and JavaScript. All of the UI is coded using Dojo. And the panels are laid out as per those methods that you selected. So your first panel is the list. When you run the application, the first panel is the list of methods from the C-sharp class. And when you choose one of those, the next panel has input fields for each input parameter to those methods. And then you click invoke, and the next panel has results as the values of the output parameters of those methods. Okay, so if we move on to slide 18, David. This is another illustration of one of WorkLite's strong points, because that application created by the adapter is just one of those very generic web apps. It's just HTML and JavaScript and nothing else. When you right-click on the application in WorkLite, you can choose to create a new WorkLite environment. And that would bring up this dialog box we see on the left. So with a single tick box, you can convert that very generic application into an Android application, or an iPhone application, or a BlackBerry application. And what we've done here is we've chosen Android, and the image you see on the right-hand side is what you see if you download, for example, the Android SDK. It comes with an emulator, so you can actually run your application under an Android emulator directly from the WorkLite Studio. And in fact, WorkLite version 5, the first one that IBM released after acquiring WorkLite, actually comes built in some emulators for not only for Android, but for the iPhones and things. So you can actually test these applications and test these shells, the device-specific environments. You can test those out from the WorkLite console, and you can see how it would look on that particular device. Okay, David, if we move on to slide 19, please, we can start to look at some of the other patterns. So the mobile services pattern, let's go on to slide 20, please, David. Okay, the mobile services pattern, your starting point here is not a .NET assembly, which is a very specific thing. Your starting point here is, I created a web service and broke it. That web service is being exposed. It says SOAP over HTTP. What this pattern does is it visits that service. It injects into it essentially another binding. It injects another entry point, which exposes that service as JSON over HTTP. And because it can expose it as JSON, JavaScript object notation, the adapter, the processing that happens in the adapter is very light. The adapter now becomes not much more than a pass-through of the JavaScript variables passed from the device into the adapter. The adapter is just giving connectivity to the broker then and passing through the same data. Okay. The broker will then consume the JSON and pass it to the implementation of the service, the message flows and the maps and the Java or the ESQ, whatever you've implemented that service in Broker, it passes that data structure in a way that the implementation doesn't know or care whether that data was passed across the wire as JSON or as SOAP. By the time it gets to the implementation, he's completely agnostic to the actual binding. So you're now taking a service that was initially developed to be exposed as SOAP over HTTP, is now exposed as JSON without changing the implementation itself. Let's move on to slide 21, please, David. And you see here that starting point. You have a service in Broker. This service is the address book service. It has a save address operation and a find address operation. And there are some XSD types associated with those operations. Now, if we move on to slide 22. So now we configure the pattern. We go to that service, we right-click on the service, which is Patterns, Create Mobile Service for WorkLife. The configuration of this pattern is simply to choose which of those operations you want to expose. Now, by default, they're all ticked. And you click OK, and then you click Generate again. So let's move on to slide 23. And again, from generating the pattern, you do get the adapter, and you bring that across, and you deploy that to your WorkLife server. And you can see it here. It deploys to the WorkLife server. Through the WorkLife console, you see the adapter, and the save address, and the ping address procedures. Okay, if we move on to slide 24. Now, the mobile service pattern doesn't go quite as far as the .NET pattern. It doesn't create the application. With a .NET method, the inputs and outputs are usually simple types, but with any web service you can create in Broker, you typically would have complex tree structures as the input and output. So creating an application for that in an automated manner would be challenging, to say the least, to have a usable user interface. But what this pattern does generate is it generates some documentation. And the documentation is essentially a description of the interface to the adapter. When we expose this service over SOAP, we would publish WSDL and XSD, because clients who invoke services as SOAP over HTTP expect the interface to be modeled. People who code JavaScript applications don't expect the interface to be modeled as such, but they do expect at least some sample input and output, and that's exactly what this pattern creates. This pattern would look at the WSDL and XSD, process the information, the metadata, the model from the XSD, process that and generate an example JSON structure that would be passed into the adapter. So this gives you a start in developing the application, but doesn't go the whole way as the .NET pattern did. Okay, should we move on to 25 now, David? So the third one is the resource handler. It's the one I mentioned where you're getting access to an object on your back-end system. Let's move on to 26 and see some detail on that. So, it does very similar things to the first two. It generates the pose and generates the adapter. The other value this pattern brings, because it knows the thing you're accessing is an object, as it knows there are four procedures you can execute on those objects, read, create, update, delete. It can do two things. It can do some caching. So if the procedure is a read, it will remember the result. So next time another application on another device comes in and asks for the same object, it will be returned from the cache. And then any calls to create, update, or delete that thing would cause it to be removed from the cache and then to be updated or deleted on the back-end system. Also, because we know the type of access you're making to the object, we can perform some policy enforcement, some security policy enforcement. This pattern has capability to call out to an LDAP server, authenticate a user ID and password passed in. Essentially, it's a HTTP basic auth token gets passed to the broker. That is authenticated, make sure the password is correct. And then we decide what procedure is being invoked. And then we authorize that user to check that he is in the correct group for reading that object, or is in the correct group to create, update, or delete that object. Okay, so slide 27, please, David. Now, this is just a quick overview of WebSphere Extreme Scale. So when I mentioned this pattern does caching, the technology we use is Extreme Scale. The idea of Extreme Scale is it's a shared cache. So you can run your broker on several servers across your network, and if one of those servers writes something to the cache, that value is available to all of the other servers. Okay, so you don't need to have several copies of the cache across your network. the way ExtremeScale works is it breaks the cache into shards. Each message broker will run a container, or some brokers can be configured not to run a container, just to connect to the brokers which do have containers. It's a very simple configuration. It's all policy-based. You edit an XML file and you say which brokers you want to have containers and which you don't, and the plumbing sorts the rest out. But it does mean that you can then scale elastically. You can add new brokers in if you want to scale. You can remove brokers if you don't need to. And the cache is just redistributed across those brokers. It's a very powerful technology for caching, and this pattern exploits it. You can also exploit this in message broker version 8 by building your own message flows and applications. The pattern is not the only way to get to that cache. Okay, can we move on to 28, David? And as I mentioned, the pattern also provides authentication and authorization and authentication via LDAP. This is optional. If you choose to configure this on the pattern, you enter all of your LDAP properties, you know, connection to the LDAP server, the base distinguished name, that helps the pattern identify the user, and a few things that would be necessary depending on how you have configured your LDAP. So what type of search to do? Each of your users would be assigned a group in LDAP. And really the pattern splits users into two groups, those who can read and those who can write. And you enter as part of the configuration of the pattern, the distinguished name of each of those groups, and then the pattern can do the proper authentication to see is this user allowed to read this object, or is this user allowed to update, create, or delete the object? Okay, yeah. Slide 29, please, David. So what the pattern creates is essentially some stubs, some empty message flows for create, retrieve, update, delete. And your job now is to go and implement those. The broker, being as it is, has nodes for connecting to all of these other systems. So, for example, I could drag an SAP node onto the create resource handler subflow. I can double-click on that node. That node will then connect to SAP from the broker design team, connect to SAP, discover the services available on SAP, whether they be IDOT types or BAPIs, and allow me to configure that node to interact with those BAPIs and IDOTs. Slide 30, please, David. Okay, so the fourth pattern is, I mentioned earlier, a bit different from the others. One is it goes in the other direction. And the other is there's not really an application to think of here. If we move on to 31, David, we'll see some of the details here. So the push notification really exploits the capability of the operating system. So this might be Apple push notifications. It might be Google's call to device management. These are the notifications you get, you know, when you've closed all of your apps and the phone is in your pocket, but occasionally you see, you know, the blue rectangle pop up telling you someone's poked you on Facebook if you're running the Facebook app, for example. It's those notifications. It's just a nudge. There's not huge amounts of data going across, but the notification can be delivered to the device whilst the applications are closed. It's very powerful for that reason. We move on to slide 32, please, David. And you see an example here of a notification appearing on the screen. You have four coupons. You can either dismiss the notification or click view, and then that would open up an application. Yeah, so it's a very small nudge more than data. Okay, but it has a hook into the application that you can then use to retrieve the data. Slide 33, please, David. And here we see how this works. So, as I said earlier, you've got something on the back end is providing these events. They're coming from somewhere. They're landing on a queue and then queue. This adapter, or this pattern, generates some message flows that receive the message the data from the queue, push it across to the adapter. The pattern creates that adapter, and the adapter has code in there to call out to your third-party push notification server, whether it's the Google, the Apple, the Microsoft services, who will then deliver it to the device. Okay, so can we go on to slide 34, please? And you see this, again, very basic configuration of that pattern. It has a name. You give it the name of the queue, and you give it the name of the address the address of the broker where this you're going to deploy it to. That way the adapter knows how to connect to the broker to receive the push. The XML you put on the queue will have some metadata that the adapter uses in order to invoke the external service that we're delivering to the device, and all of that is configured in the pattern. Okay, if we move on to slide 35, please, you'll see once you've generated that pattern, you have an XML data model to describe the data that needs to be placed onto the MQ queue. So it has that metadata that's needed to deliver the notification to the device, the user ID, the badge, a sound that would play when it delivered, and so on. Okay, so this XSD can then be used by the providing application or by another message flow who proxies for the providing application to receive the event in its native form from the back end and then transform it into this format so that the pattern can then pick it up, pass it through the adapter and off to the third party service, and then off to your device. Okay, can we move on to slide 36, please? So, just to summarise there, the idea is we're trying to bring integration to the mobile world. Message Broker being very strong in integration, and with its patterns being very strong in simple top-down development, really helps you quickly get to a point where you can expose your services to mobile devices. Now, these patterns were developed because we listened to what people were doing and what they wanted to do, and I'm sure we haven't heard the end of it. These are just four patterns. There are bound to be more. So if you have any ideas, if you have any requirements, please talk to us. My email address is at the front of the deck, so please use that if you have any ideas. Please contact us. If you have any questions, when you start getting to use this, feel free to contact me. If you have any problems, again, contact me and we will try to resolve those. But really, the strength of these patterns are on how useful they are, how much they apply to real requirements. So we are very interested to hear your requirements, so please do your feedback. Can we move on to slide 37, please, David? Okay, so I just want to leave you with, if anything, three takeaway points. One is how important it is to be relevant by exposing your back-end services to mobile, how important that is in this day and age. And I think most people will get that, so that's fine. The second thing to leave you with is how easy it can be with Broker and with the patterns and with all of the connectivity and discovery of the back-end services that we have in Broker, how easy it can be. And the third thing to leave you with is, for more detail, that first link in page 37 is a YouTube playlist. There's about half a dozen videos on there. There will be more added over time. And they go through step-by-step exactly how to use these patterns. Go visit that link. One of the videos is a two-minute video, which is just showing how easy it can be to get from having a .NET assembly to having an application running on your device. It's a two-minute video. It doesn't take much of your time. Some of the other videos are a bit longer, they're 10, 20 minutes, and they go into step-by-step exactly how to get one of those patterns integrated with an SAP system. And it really goes through every single thing you need to do, and then visualizing that application running on your broker. Those three things, how important it is, how easy it can be, and visit YouTube to see for yourself exactly how to do it. And obviously you have the Mission Broker Help and the Worklight product page if you need more information about either of those products. Okay, so with that, I thank you, and if we just skip past 38 and onto 39, please, David. Again, I want to leave you with the knowledge that there are other resources available to you to learn more about Registry products in general. So that hopefully these half dozen links, the resources will be useful as well. But at that, I'll hand back over to David and see if there are any questions. David, thank you.
Thank you, John, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. Moving on to the Q&A session, I would like to remind you that for those of you who join us via the web conference, you can also post your questions in the group chat. At this time, Teresa, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We do have a question from Titus Anthony. Your line is open.
Hi, John. It was a nice presentation. I have a basic question. Which version of a broker have these functionalities, like the mobile capabilities?
It's a good question. So this came out in version 8. It was a fixed pack on version 8.0.0.1. But that fixed pack is a manufacturing refresh. So any clients who purchase Message Broker version 8 after, I think it was August 2012, will have that fixed pack as on the physical media. If you had purchased or acquired broker before August, you will have to update it with the fixed pack one.
Okay, thank you. And one more question. The Worklight component, is it part of broker or it's kind of a different product altogether?
Yeah, it's a different product.
And the broker will have only the adapter for that?
Correct. So the broker patterns generate those adapters. You know, each instance of the pattern will generate a new adapter, especially for that pattern.
And so how do you test the application which is written in broker?
So it's a very good question, actually. You can test. So the things that run on the broker, just plain old broker applications and message flows, they happen to expose their entry points as HTTP, and the data format they support is JSON. But you can use any HTTP tool to send that same JSON into the application and test it without the need of Worklight or a mobile application. Yeah, if you want to test the adapter piece that the pattern generates, obviously you will need Worklight to run the adapter. As long as you can get the JavaScript object notation format onto an HTTP socket, onto the broker's URL, you can test the broker application standalone.
Thank you, John.
There are no other questions in queue, sir.
Okay, thank you. We do have a few questions in the group chat, and the first one is, how does Worklight translate JSON to SOAP? Does it use any programming language to do that? This is in reference to slide 13.
Yeah, so in that pattern, the pattern creates the adapter, and within that adapter there is JavaScript code to convert the JSON, the SOAP, the JSON to SOAP on the way out, and the SOAP response back to JSON. JavaScript lets you do that in a boilerplate fashion. So you can write your SOAP message, you hard code it into the JavaScript, with escape variables that would be replaced with the JavaScript variables. Okay, so you actually, if you look in the adapter that the pattern generates, you'll see the SOAP XML, and there will just be the couple of points that are variants within the XML will be escaped out to be replaced with the values of some JavaScript variables. Those are the variables that are passed through the procedure from the application.
Okay, thank you. The next question is, is SSL termination done at WorkLight Server or WMD?
So it is a good question, and you know, just the whole general discussion on security would not normally does come up here. Not normally what you would do is you would manage your security between the WorkLight Server and the mobile device. As I said, and the reason I said that this session is not intended to be a deep education on WorkLight is because, frankly, I don't know all of those answers, and if I do try to give you those answers, chances are that they're probably out of date. It's probably best referring to the WorkLight documentation or the WorkLight support to find out exactly the best practices for configuring security between your device and your WorkLight server.
And then the last question in the group chat, someone is asking about the toolkit fix pack.
Yeah, so again, same as the first question there. So this was all in fix pack 1, version 8, which is now the manufacturing refresh. So it's on any digital media you would acquire or electronic download you would acquire. For example, if you download it from Extreme Leverage, now, the image you get will have all of this in there.
All right, thank you. Teresa, are there any more questions on the phone?
There are not, sir.
All right, thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, John, for presenting today.